Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Indie Authors Roundtable. I'm your host, R.L. Jackson, author of the Crashing series, available on Nook, Kobo, and Amazon, and editor-in-chief of Indie Authors Monthly magazine on Magstar. I'm also a host of Navigating Indie World radio show. Welcome.
Hi, I'm Carol P. Roman, author of over 50 books and host of Navigating Indie World blog show, and Let's Say Hello to Our Neighbors. I'm also creative director of Indie Authors Monthly magazine.
Hi. I'm Anita Dickinson, author of the FBI Tracker Crime Series novels and fiction editor, columnist, and book reviewer for Indie Authors Monthly magazine.
Tosca Lee is the award-winning New York Times bestselling author of The House of Bathory duology, The Progeny and Firstborn, Iscariot, The Legend of Sheba, Demon, a memoir, Hava, The Story of Eve, and the Books of Mortal series with New York Times bestseller Ted Decker, Forbidden, Mortal, Sovereign. A notorious night owl, she loves watching TV, eating bacon, playing video games and football with her kids, and sending cheesy texts to her husband.
Tosca, this is Anita, and welcome to the
show.
Hi,
Anita. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I have really been looking forward to this because I've been wanting to find out your take on some of your historical background on your books, which kind of leads me into my first question for you, which is The Progeny, book one in The Descendants of the House of Bathory. It's been categorized as art mystery, romance, action thriller, and even paranormal. So if you had to pick one genre, how would you classify it?
Oh, you know, I think I would just call it a thriller because that's kind of the overarching, the umbrella genre, I guess, even though it has been called kind of genre bending because of all those other elements. But I think I would call it, or a suspense, I would call it a thriller or a suspense overall.
Okay.
Grady Harp, a reviewer on Amazon, says, this is Carol, by the way, and welcome
to
the show, Tosca. Hi, nice
Thank
to meet
you.
In one of the most well-executed novels of recent years, Tosca Lee delivers the opening segment of her series, The House of Bathory, with polished prose and a very keen sense of timing and drama that brings the legend of Countess Elizabeth Bathory de Esked, the Hungarian noblewoman and alleged murderer of 650 victims. You know, I've read a lot about Countess Elizabeth. How did you pick Countess Elizabeth to be part of your plot?
You know, that's a great question, and it's kind of an interesting story. I was doing a signing in, I think it was Orlando, and there was a fan there who wanted a picture and didn't have his phone or camera or anything like that. And so I said, we'll take one online and I'll email it to you. And so I sent it to him a few days later. And when he wrote me back, he said, have you ever thought of doing a book about Elizabeth Bathory? And, you know, I get requests from people, you know, to write about different characters pretty much all the time. And I was like, you know, that rings a bell, and I'm trying to remember who that is. And I went and I looked her up, and turns out I had heard of her before. She's called the Blood Countess by some people. And I had actually seen a book about her at one time, and I thought she sounded really fascinating. So I just put it in a file for later. I've got a big file of, you know, stuff, ideas, whatever. And I pulled it out sometime later when I was trying to think of what to do next. And I didn't really want to do another historical at that time. I wanted to do something fast-paced and contemporary, but she ended up being a great mythology and basis for this contemporary story about her modern-day descendants. And it gave me an opportunity to include aspects of her life and research her, and also to go over to Hungary and all of the places in the books as well. So it was a great excuse to take a trip.
Oh, so you actually went to Hungary?
Oh, yeah. I've been every place that's in the book I've been. And so for readers who are interested in the story and who want to follow along, you can actually go to Pinterest and go to my Pinterest boards. And there's one called the Real Life Progeny, and you can see the locations and objects and places from the books and see them for yourself.
Did you actually, I don't mean to interject, but I got to ask, did you actually see the place where she was walled up and eventually, you know, died?
Yes. Yes, I was there. Yep, walked around. It's kind of in a ruined state right now. You know,
right.
It's falling down. But, yes, I was. And there's a picture of that as well.
Oh, I'm gonna look. I thought it was interesting that you named the dog Attila. as a nod to Attila the Hun in Hungary.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to ask
have
one
a dog
more question. I'm sorry?
I used to have a dog named Attila, actually, so, yeah.
Do you feel that they're misunderstood, Elizabeth and Attila? Do you think, as Hungarian folklore, that they're a little misunderstood?
You know, Elizabeth Bathory, you know, I think there's a lot of unexplored stuff there. I kind of smell a conspiracy when I look back on her life. There was a lot that happened with her. For those who don't know who are listening, she was accused of torturing and killing over 600 young women. And then, you know, later on, according to Hollywood, she bathed in the blood of her victims to stay young and beautiful and all this stuff. But she was known to be a very literate, you know, spoke and wrote four languages, very wealthy, well-to-do noble woman who was known to be a doting mother who gave money to the church and all this stuff. So there's a lot of stuff that doesn't quite add up there, especially when you realize that the crown owed her a lot of money. And when her husband died and she tried to collect that debt from the king, it didn't go over very well, and that debt was actually forgiven when she was walled up. And the king later went on to become the Holy Roman Emperor. So I think it's a little fishy myself.
It was really funny. I read the book last night, and I have to tell you, when I read that part, I knew about Elizabeth, Countess Elizabeth, mm-hmm. and when I read that part, I went, oh, my God, what a brilliant twist. And it really, I had to finish the book last night. I read it literally from 8 to midnight, and I couldn't put it down. Because it was totally unexpected, you know, and I thought
it was
a really interesting twist. So now I'm going to let, who's next? I think it's RL. I'm sorry, girl.
No, that was really interesting. Don't apologize. My question is pretty basic. I just wanted to know if there are any other books or authors that influenced your style over the years, and who were they?
Oh, gosh. You know, there's so many. And I have a lot of friends who are authors too, so I always feel a little put on the spot when I try to answer this question. But, you know, one author that I've consistently read who's been a big influence on me from the beginning was Anne Rice. So that's one in particular. But there's a lot of authors that, you know, every book you read, you pick up like something, you know what I mean? I would also probably have to name my co-author Ted Decker. But like I said, every book I read, I just finished reading a really cool book called Dark Matter by Blake Crouch. And I loved it, you know, and I keep thinking about how he did certain things. So I don't know, as a reader, I feel a little bit like a piece of Velcro that's picking up, you know, things with each book that I read.
Yeah.
Have you been following, this is Carol again, have you been following the stories of the actual descendants of Countess Elizabeth?
Well, I have seen and heard of just a couple. There was an actress, but it was hard to kind of pinpoint some of those people. But I will tell you one really weird thing that happened to me while I was working on it. My mother's a lifelong genealogist, so this whole theme of genealogy that happens in the books is very close and, you know, something I've I grew up around my whole life. But when I told my mother what I was writing and who it was about and stuff, she said, well, you know, we're distantly related to her.
Oh, how
interesting. And I was like, no.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I wasn't sure whether to be creeped out or think that was cool, but yeah, it's very distant, but there is a tie there. So that was weird.
There was a special on, I want to say it was like either TLC or Bravo. I don't remember which one. It wasn't Bravo. It was one of the Lifetime networks or something, where the one of the male descendants of Elizabeth Bathory invited the victims of the descendants of the families of the servant girls who were murdered, and he apologized. Did you see that?
No, I did not.
Yeah,
that is interesting to me because, you know, in my story, I talk about the descendants not only of Elizabeth herself, but of the families of the victims.
It was very interesting because I don't read the blurbs when I read a book. I don't read what it's about. I dive into a book and either I love it or I'm not, you know, and then maybe when I'm halfway through, I'll look at it. But it was very interesting because on this show, it was very strange, but the descendants of the victims, it was almost as if they were acting it out as though it was a generation ago rather than, you know, whatever, eight generations before. It was so real to these people in this small town. You
mm-hmm.
should try and see if you can get, you know, the video, a copy
of that
video.
I would love to watch that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would love to watch that. And I know that, you know, one of the things about when they locked her up is that her name was not to be spoken after that because the whole point of locking her away was for her to become as though she had never been.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's still considered impolite in certain company or nice society to speak her name.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Yeah, you should look
crazy
it up. Look up if you can see the television show. But it was very interesting, and that's what I thought of, you know, with especially with
wow.
the watchers and the, you know, all the different people that were involved.
Hmm.
Amazing. Tosca, your characters and plots are very intricate. And I know you mentioned you went out to those different countries to do your research. What other research did you do to get your information for your book?
That's a big part of it. I went to, the book starts in Maine, so I went on one trip to Maine. And then it kind of globetrots over all over Europe, and so I was in each of those places. The streets and the locations and stuff are all streets and places that I've been. Beyond that, there's always something, whether it's the way that DNA can be used for genealogy and how that works, how there's always something. So whether it's you know, where characters can be running to escape somebody or where a fight can happen and where the street accesses are, I really try to keep everything as real and
yeah.
accurate as possible.
That's amazing research. Like, not a lot of people do that. They just create something and, you know, run with it. But to take it to that level, I mean, that must be an adventure if you live there to be able to actually experience it, you know, real time almost. Cool.
You could actually go and walk through it and stuff like that, yeah. But I'm a little obsessive about that kind of thing. So, yeah.
It shows when you read the book, you know that it's not somebody working with Google Maps. I will tell you
mm-hmm.
that, you know, when you were in Maine and then, you know, when she travels to Europe, it was a definite feel that I thought you came from, like, I didn't know anything about you personally. And I felt that you had definitely traveled, you know, that maybe you had lived in Maine, that you were writing about places you had been, but you could definitely feel the difference.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much.
Tosca, this is Anita.
Hi, Anita.
Some of your books that you've co-authored with Ted Decker, I'd be really curious as to, you know, you've been talking about the complexity here of your research and what you've had to do to, you know, develop your plots and your characters. So when you're working with another author, how do you blend you know, your thought pattern and your vision of where this book is going to go with the vision that's coming from someone else. How difficult or how easy is that?
Well, there are definitely going to be bumps along the way anytime you're writing with somebody else. But for us with that series, we brainstormed it from the ground up. And so it was something that was built together through a lot of conversations, I mean, hours and hours and hours and pages of notes. And so that vision was, you know, the product of a conversation that went on for a very long time. And then the writing part, you know, that was actually the hardest part because at the time our voices were very different. Mine would probably be considered more lyrical and, you know, I wrote in a more literary style, and Ted has been known for his thrillers and his pacing. And so we had to find a way to blend those voices. And that was the result of a lot of rewriting, especially on the first book. But it came much faster and much more naturally on the second and third books. And then the voices, you know, kind of blended together a lot better and more readily. And then oddly enough, he went on to start writing historical stuff like I had written before, and I went on to start writing thrillers. So, but we did have our moments. There were times when there was one time I remember I was doing a chapter, and we would talk through like, okay, the next, you know, three chapters, here's what's going to happen in this one. Here's what's going to happen in the next one. We would lay them out in this case, it was me. I was going to go lay down the first draft, and I tend to work at night, so I would work at night. I would send it off sometime in the wee hours, and he would go through it in the morning. And it was one chapter in particular I wrote and sent it off, and I got this call the next morning, and it was Ted, and he was like, "You killed Tryphon, this character." And I was like, yeah. And he was like, you weren't supposed to kill Tryphon. That wasn't in the plan. And I was like, you know, everything kind of pointed that direction. And it was just his time. You got to let him go, man. Let him go. And so we had this whole conversation because, you know, it's funny because when you're plotting, you know, as you know, you can plot to your heart's content. But when you really get into a story and you get boots on the ground, the story changes sometimes and it looks different from that vantage. And so, you know, the plans change with it. So.
Definitely.
In other words, you're saying that, that your characters were kind of leading you as to where you wanted to go, as opposed to an outline where you had laid out everything.
But Anita, isn't it always like that? Like the characters, you're pushing them in one direction, and then all of a sudden, RL, do you find that too? All of a sudden, the characters tell you what they want?
Oh, yeah. And mine, I always end up throwing out half a 10-page outline. So I understand exactly what you mean.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that that Tosca writes about actual historical figures, because I would think that it's a lot harder to propel a historical figure in the direction you want when there's actual factual information about the person. So I think it's a harder genre to write about.
Mm. Well, there are certain things you do have to do. Yeah.
Well,
you get a little more freedom though, I think, with your secondary ones. I'm sorry, what was that?
Well, I come back to your comment about, you know, you were picking up the subtle undertones of this conspiracy, maybe, if that's what you want to call it, that there was more than what was on the surface as to the hidden agendas of maybe some of the other people that were involved at that time frame. And I think that would lend itself to really letting that character kind of guide you when you have that perspective to come from. Hey, wait a minute, maybe there's more to this than what the historians are saying.
You know what, Anita? Yeah. I got to tell you that I was not expecting that bombshell, and you know, I'm a historian. You know that I'm a historian, and when I saw, I said, "Oh my God, that makes perfect sense." And I think that it took a great imagination to even you know, to really take off in that direction.
Yeah, I would agree.
Thank you. Well, you know, the research always has these angles that just lend themselves, I think, to interesting twists, you know, if you dig deep enough. Because I think there's a story about characters like that, you know, about any historical character that we think we know. And then there's their real story. And I think that's true with people, too. I mean, we think we know people, but, you know, there's always more to that person's life than, you know, what we know about, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
And sometimes it's usually, you know, it's usually just common sense. Like we really, we build these things, and then it just, your theory made a lot more sense than the historical record.
Hmm. Well, you know, it's hard to kill like 600 people.
Right, right.
Yeah.
One at a time.
Right.
That's
like a village.
Impressive.
It's like a village.
Yeah, it is. It's, yeah. It's like a village.
So, Tosca, in your interview for our June issue of Indie Authors Monthly, you mentioned that your books Progeny and Firstborn were in TV development. Can you give us any details of what we can expect?
Well, we are in the middle of that conversation right now. So I'm hoping that we'll be able to make an announcement pretty soon. They're doing all the negotiating and that stuff. So I'm really hoping that we'll be able to say more very shortly. So, but
awesome.
It's going well. It's just, it's been an educational experience. I actually went out to LA to take part in the pitches for that. And there's a lot of hoops to jump through.
Tell me about it. Are you with a production company, or you're looking for a producer first?
No, we've got two production companies that have been spearheading this. So Radar Pictures is one, and Ed Burns's Marlboro Road Gang is the other. And then we've got our showrunner and writer, and So we'll see kind of where it goes from here. Yeah.
They're buying up everything right now, like between Amazon and Netflix and, you know, HBO, that it's a really good time to be a writer, you know, because they need so much material to streaming. We're actually going through something very similar for my son, who's an author. And people think you get picked up for a movie and it's just done, or a TV show, it's just done. And I think our own RL knows, she got very close to it. She got to almost the final stage, and then it collapsed, right, RL?
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm very well versed in how that can go. But hopefully that's not the case.
It's kind of like the planets have to align.
I think they call it developmental hell or production hell, because you know, you just don't, that's what they call it in the industry, because you just don't know when it's going to end. To me, you know, it's a really hard. We just got back from LA for that too. RL, I think you had one more question.
Next question: how much of you is in your books?
That's a good question. I feel like I kind of live through each of these characters. I remember writing, and this might feel like the least likely one, but I remember writing the story of Judas Iscariot, which I wrote in first person. And I remember going into that thinking, okay, you're a first century Jewish guy. You know, so I'm trying to get into this mindset. And, you know, putting myself in that historical setting of being oppressed and basically occupied in my own country by the Romans and all this stuff. And about a halfway through that book, I really felt like I was no longer writing his story, but writing my own story, not because of the oppression or whatever, but because of the expectations that he had for this friend of his who was Jesus Christ, and, you know, the way he thought that he should be things. And I felt like it was my story in a lot of ways. And so I think there's a lot of me in each character. Obviously, they're all different and more extraordinary than me in many ways. But I think I give many of them my own neuroses, probably. So that's probably how.
Okay. Well, it's really interesting that you go from Christian speculative fiction into writing about Elizabeth Bathory, who is one of the most sinister women in history. So you're definitely diverse. I think Anita has a question now.
Well, I'm really curious as to what's next on the table for you. My goodness, what you've already done is just truly phenomenal. It really is. So where do you go from here?
I've got a book coming out in January called The Line Between, and it is the story of a young woman who has just been kicked out of an apocalyptic cult, and right about the time that a pandemic hits the U.S., and so it actually seems like the apocalypse that she has always been told was coming. And so that story comes out in January, and the thing that I'm writing right now, trying to finish up this weekend, is the sequel to that.
Wow. Well, we'll be looking forward to that, that's for sure.
Thank you. I just revealed the cover yesterday. It's a really cool cover. I'm really happy with it. And
is that up on your website?
It's on my website.
It's a new cover.
And it's also on Goodreads. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Awesome.
I'm a little behind. The cover's actually been up on Amazon and Goodreads for a few weeks, but being on deadline, I'm just kind of slow. I was a little late.
Well, thank you so much, Tosca. This has been an amazing interview. Can you give us the link where our readers can find you online?
Absolutely. The main one would be toscalee.com, TOSCALEE.com. Other than that, I'm on social media, so you just look for me there under my name, Tosca Lee, and on Amazon and all the usual places like that. And I just want to say thank you, ladies, for having me, and thank you for interviewing other authors to help spotlight their work. I really, truly appreciate it. So,
well, thank you so much. It's been an
absolute
pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you.
Remember, if you guys want to stay up to date with Tosca's world, please visit her at toscalee.com. That's TOSCALEE.com, and look for her books available on iBooks, Nook, Kobo, and Amazon. This is R.L. Jackson saying so long for Carol P. Roman and Anita Dickinson. We'd like to thank our guests again, Tosca Lee, and all of our listeners. We hope you'll tune in for another Indie Authors Roundtable, where we bring the latest in books, authors, and indie publishing to the table. Don't forget to catch the latest issue of Indie Authors Monthly, available on Magster.com. Have an amazing day, and see you guys next time.